Chapter 13. Menagerie. Despite their revelation of a tiger being met with derision by Janice Owl, the fact remained Tony Stark was still dead. There was no denying she was mauled to death by something possessing jaws more powerful than any human. As Janice ushered them out of her quarters after they lost sight of the creature, there was nothing left to do but return to the rendezvous point and gather a detail to tend to the young woman's body. Buck was reluctant to bury her on this lonely planetoid, not when there was a possibility of returning her to her family when they got back to the ship. Janice's callous dismissal of Tony's death when the only reason Starfleet officers were on this rock in the first place was to aid the Lenin and its crew infuriated Buck. He reminded himself a commanding officer had no time for such feelings, not when he still had two crewmen missing and a dangerous animal to track before it killed again. Despite his anger at losing one of his people, the question begged to be asked: how had the tiger remained unseen until now? The Maverick's crew never saw the slightest presence of the feline, not to mention the difficulties in caring for the animal. It was also a terrible strain on resources to keep a tiger fed, considering how voracious its dietary requirements could be. However, why was not as crucial to Buck as the how? The Maverick's crew had been right throughout the ship in their repair efforts. Even the parts of it supposedly contaminated by Berthold radiation and nothing they saw supported the possibility of this tiger's existence before this day. Buck knew that the timing of Ensign Stark's death could not be coincidental since they had now lost their means to escape the planetoid. Even though he kept his observations to himself, he had the terrible premonition things were going to escalate now they were effectively trapped here with the Lenin's crew and unable to warn the Maverick of the danger. There was no reason for subterfuge now. The strange forces on this planetoid could move about freely, unafraid of discovery. Buck wondered if Julia and Ezra had found something and were done away with. As they made their way back to the rendezvous point where the Maverick's crew held Kellison and his people at bay, Buck noticed JD had become very silent. The young man was clearly disturbed, which was unsurprising considering he and Ensign Stark probably moved in the same circles. They were the same age and probably knew each other at the academy. Buck, who had more than his share of fellow officers dying in the past, could appreciate how difficult it was to absorb the death of a crewmate, especially when one was young and fresh from the academy. The glamour of a starship assignment was still new, and it had yet to sink in that it was dangerous out here, and people died regularly. JD Dunn was one of the most promising young officers in the Maverick's stable, and it was Buck's singular pleasure to mentor him through his formative years in Starfleet. Yet there were some things JD would have to learn himself, and all Buck could do was offer guidance.
You okay, JD?
Yeah, I just can't believe that woman couldn't care less.
Believe it.
Buck's lips thinned into an unhappy line mostly because he was no happier by the lack of compassion shown at Ensign Stark's grisly death, not to mention her adamant refusal to believe how it had happened. All she had been interested in doing was proving she did not see the creature that committed the act of murder, even when the bloody prince proved the tiger could have gone nowhere else.
I remember reading the manifest for all the animals,
JD explained, emerging into the darkness outside the ship. Now more than ever, the oxygenated night seemed more foreboding than ever. JD never realized how eerie it looked on the surface of this planetoid.
Manifest.
Buck looked at him, remembering the youth had mentioned something but not paying close attention until now.
How many of them were there?
About 11.
Something about that number struck him even though, at present, he could not imagine how. No more than he could imagine how Kellison could keep livestock alive when their own survival here was so tenuous. While Buck would feel naturally grieved at destroying the animals, he would not hesitate to do so when it kept them from starving to death. There was no way the Lenin could feed animals of this nature, even if they were willing to sacrifice their ration packs. However, the Lenin crew did not appear starved, not in the least. Sure, they were gaunt and a little hollow around the eyes, but that was what one expected of people trapped on this planetoid for so long. They were cresting the top of a slight mound when suddenly, Aislinn appeared before them. She was out of breath when she sighted JD and Buck.
Aislinn, what are you doing here? You should be back with the others.
Her presence here brought to mind other concerns immediately. How had she managed to get past his security team? As charming as the young lady could be, Ezra's security officers were professionals and trained by the chief, himself, not to fall sway to any entreaty, especially if it came from a group of individuals whose intentions were suspect.
I had to come, I had to warn you.
Warn us of what? How did you get past the security team?
His hands gripped her shoulders tightly, and he was just angry enough after losing Ensign Stark to shake the truth out of her, which was mild in comparison to what he had in mind when he got his hands on Mr. Kellison.
You're in trouble,
she insisted, clearly conflicted about breaking with her own to give him the warning.
I didn't want them to get you too.
Them?
Buck's voice hardened into granite at the possibility of danger to his engineering team and security officers.
Who's them?
He shook her and drew a cry from her.
Please, Buck.
She pleaded for him to stop. Tears ran down her youthful face.
It was not my idea. I didn't have a choice. We had to do what it wanted us to do. It needs to feed.
Buck's eyes widened as JD's jaw dropped open. He stopped shaking Aislinn and stared at her.
What do you mean, it?
It lured us here the same way it lured you.
Aislinn wept, displaying genuine guilt in her young eyes. Buck believed her, not blind to her affection for him, and recognized the bright, burning love that possessed any young girl with her first crush.
But the damage to the ship.
It lets you see what it wants you to see.
She explained, knowing it was death if the others heard her speak this way. However, Aislinn was not about to let Buck Wilmington end up the same way as all the others lured to this world in the last 6 months.
The ship is not damaged. We landed because we detected a distress signal and saw a ship on the surface. Once we were here, it would not let us leave. It killed everyone except us.
Where is it?
JD asked, his phaser drawn as his eyes darted about apprehensively for their phantom creature.
It's all around us. For those of us left alive, we found that we could communicate with it after a while. It told us it would keep us alive and maintain the air if we cooperated.
Why didn't you just leave?
JD asked because Buck was too busy contemplating what Aislinn had told him already. Aislinn did not answer, and as she struggled to address JD's question, Buck spared her the embarrassment of revealing the truth.
It's because they don't know how.
Now things started to make sense. Julia Pemberton's observation that none of the Lennon's crew were capable of making even the most minor repairs on their ship or even troubling themselves with the notion of making their habitat even the slightest bit more comfortable during the length of their incarceration. Aislinn blinked, and warm tears ran down her cheeks.
No, we don't,
she whispered, ashamed as Buck raised her chin in his hand and wiped the tear running down her reddened cheeks.
I don't like what we've done, but I'm the weakest and the youngest. What I say doesn't matter to the others.
It's not your fault.
JD understood perfectly how it was to be overruled by his elders, although he could not imagine being in the terrible situation Aislinn found herself.
You couldn't help it.
I don't like hurting people.
She swallowed, looking at Buck, needing him to understand most of all because of how she felt about him.
I like them, and I don't want to see them get killed. All I want is to be away from here. If I help you get away, will you promise to take me, Buck?
She asked hopefully, gazing into his strong face, hoping the kindness she saw there was not an illusion like everything else in her universe.
Of course, I will.
Buck promised, having no stomach to disappoint this child who was not responsible for the action of the adults around her.
Thank you, Buck.
She smiled at him sadly and then added,
I am sorry about the others.
After the most backbreaking endeavor that either officer had undertaken in recent times, Ezra and Julia finally crossed the bizarre formation. The Lennon was where they left it. They saw no one as they made their way towards the ship and were no longer impeded by the mysterious force that saw fit to plant a mountain before them. The lack of interference gave Ezra reason for concern. What was the real motivation for granting them passage back to their friends? The entity had to know the news they brought could only confirm the Maverick's suspicion about this place. Thus, instead of going to the Maverick, Ezra decided the safest course of action was to get Julia to the runabout so she could return to the starship and inform the captain what they discovered. He would find Buck and convey the same. Despite the seemingly benign state of their mysterious attacker at present, Ezra had no intention of allowing her to go to the midkiff on her own and insisted on accompanying her. Only until he saw the craft in the air would he rest easy.
Are you sure you won't come with me?
Julia hated to separate after their trek together.
No.
Ezra shook his head even though he would not mind being far away from this place, but he was chief security officer. That meant he had a responsibility to his crew beyond his personal feelings.
I have to find Commander Wilmington and tell him what we have learned, not to mention what we have endured. I, for one, am very interested in Mr. Kellison's explanation of things.
Ezra, he may not know anything,
she pointed out as they progressed towards the runabout.
If we couldn't see those ships without flash blindness, it is completely possible that neither could the Lennon's crew.
Julia, I have made a career of reading people and learning what they are thinking, enough to know that Mr. Kellison is lying and has been lying since we arrived here. It is as much body language as what it is in his eyes, and both tell me he is hiding something, something exceedingly dangerous, and is near terrified of having us find out. I will know what that is, one way or another."
Julia nodded somberly, aware he had to do what he must. It was why she cared so much about him. Ezra Standish was such a paradox. There were moments when he appeared as if he would trade his own mother for a quick dollar, and then there were other times when Ezra bore such a strong streak of nobility and honor. It was hard to imagine he was the same man.
"Is that right?"
She brightened a little, trying not to dampen the moment with unhappy thoughts.
"So tell me, what am I thinking?"
Ezra flashed her that dimpled smile she found utterly irresistible before saying,
"Well, you're thinking I am this terribly charming man you must simply forgive for his trespass at our first encounter?"
"Oh, really? I try again."
Ezra was about to respond when a scream and several others sliced through their ears with the piercing effectiveness of a knife.
"What the hell was that?"
she demanded, but Ezra was already running, phasers drawn. Julia ran behind him in pursuit, wondering what else could possibly happen now. The screams continued, blood-curdling, chilling groans of deep agony, and as they ran across the sandy terrain against the blackness of space as their sky, there seemed to be something primeval soaking up the strange air coating this world. As they neared the cries, they could hear other sounds, not quite screams but not voices either. If one had to define it, the best description would be a roar. Through this harsh environment that looked like the lunar surface of barren rock, they could hear an animal roaring in majestic fury. What they saw as they closed in was enough to strike them with horror. Both Ezra and Julia stood frozen in place for a few seconds, wondering if this was just another illusion produced by the mysterious entity manipulating everything around them. Yet the tide of blood in the dying before them revealed the awful truth. This madness was real. The creatures varied from small to enormous predators, the kinds one would see in a preserve. A tiger was presently tearing out the throat of one of his security officers while those who had not been overcome were firing at the creatures desperately, trying to chase them off their screaming comrades to little or no avail. The engineering officers who were not armed did not have the luxury of defense, and as the jaws snapped close around one neck, ending them in a spurt of blood, Ezra was already shooting when he sighted something else. Shadows rose out of the bodies of those who died. It drifted out of the corpses like quiet smoke before being absorbed into the heaving earth. Each death produced a repeat of this strange phenomenon. Mist-like, it lifted out of the body long enough to enjoy freedom for an instant before the earth swallowed it once more like a magnet pulling in nail fillings. Ezra watched for a split second, watching the cycle take place, hollowing in the gut each time it happened because he knew it was one of his crewmates. Setting his phaser for kill since stunt seemed to be doing little to stop the creatures from mauling those who were unarmed, he took careful aim knowing his shots had to be precise or he would be dealing death to whomever he was trying to save.
"Ezra, watch out!"
Julia screamed as he adjusted his weapon and looked up to see the furry bulk of orange and blank stripes leaping at him with Deeth leading the way. Ezra raised his arm to fire, but the creature moved incredibly fast. All he could do was use it to keep the tiger from its throat. The power in those feline limbs dropped them both on the ground, with the creature clearly in the dominant position. His phaser flew out of his hand just before Teeth sank deep into his forearm. Ezra let out a cry of pain as blood immediately spilled forth from the broken skin, staining his turtleneck in waves of vibrant red. Julia watched in horror as the animal prepared to move its powerful jaws to the tender flesh of Ezra's neck before she lunged for the phaser that had been in his hand. Too many around her were lying dead against the soil for her to endure Ezra joining their number. She moved with more grace and agility than she ever mustered in her life. After diving for the weapon, Julia rolled onto her knees, praying her routine target practice was not a wasted effort. A phaser set for kill left no trace of a body. When the beam struck the creature, its entire form glowed, and its last act in the living world was to utter a roar of defiance and pain before it disintegrated. The security chief let out a sigh of relief as the animal vanished above him. The other animals, seeing the destruction of one of their number, were momentarily startled by the sudden show of force by the prey. The shock of it scattered them in all directions into the darkness of the surrounding plains. What was left in their wake showed Ezra that the Maverick's crew had won no victory of any kind.
"Ezra, you're bleeding."
Julia hurried over to him, stating the obvious as he tended to his arm while at the same time surveying the extent of the carnage around them. At least half their number lay dead, and most of these were engineering officers who had not been armed at the time of the attack. Hampered by their inability to shoot without a clear line of fire, some of his security team was similarly mauled to death.
I am fine.
He cared little about his minor injury, not when there was blood everywhere. Ezra had not seen such a grisly scene since he was an ensign fighting the border wars with the Cardassians. The area before them looked like the aftermath of the battlefield.
Oh my god.
Julia recognized some of the dead as men and women she had worked with. She strayed from him, trying to remain detached about their deaths as Starfleet officers were meant to be, but there was no way she could manage it completely. Her hand covered her mouth as she tried to hide her sorrow and blinked away tears as she went to help some of the survivors.
Commander Standish?
Lieutenant Katovic exclaimed from where he was kneeling over one of the junior members of the security team, looking as dismayed as Ezra but lacking the chief's poker face.
We've been looking everywhere for you and Lieutenant Pemberton.
Ezra shared the younger officer's distress at the bodies strewn about the place. These were his people. He was responsible for their safety. For them to die when they had come here on an errand of mercy left him outraged. However, Ezra swallowed the bile of his anger to meet Katovic's gaze.
It is a long story,
Ezra said in a measured voice because that was all he could trust himself to say. Despite his fury, his outrage could wait. The objective right now was to get everyone back to the Maverick before more lives were lost.
Suffice to say, this planetoid is full of surprises. However, I am more interested in learning what the hell happened here.
The captain ordered us back to the ship when you went missing. We were gathered here preparing to leave when all of a sudden, it happened.
Those creatures emerged out of nowhere?
No, sir.
Katovic shook his head.
Those creatures are the crew of the Lenin.
Chapter 14. Livestock.
It's simple, really.
Alex addressed the captain and the senior staff inside the Maverick's briefing room.
We know the life form radiates a dampening field capable of deflecting our sensor scans, jams our communication channels, and also prevents transporter lock, which effectively leaves us blind on all levels. When the away team first arrived on the planetoid's surface, Ezra noted the Lenin was less damaged than what was initially thought. At the time, we didn't think much of it, but now I believe what he saw was not an aberration but rather an illusion.
An illusion? Chris absorbed her words, finding her theory sound as he recalled every piece of information Buck and the others had reported to him during their mission on the planetoid.
I think you're right. Julia more or less said the same thing. Initially, she estimated it would take a great deal of work to get the ship off the ground if it was even possible. Once she inspected the ship on the planetoid, the damage was nowhere near as severe.
All life forms have some form of defense mechanism.
Nathan added his voice into the discussion.
The chameleon on Earth changes color to blend into the environment, the tree climbers of Altair can exude a body odor with hallucinogenic properties. Just because this creature is significantly larger in size, does not mean it doesn't have a defensive capability of its own. This one, however, also acts as a lure for its food source.
Could we please pick another way to put that?
Mary winced at the thought of their friends on the planetoid being the main course for an alien life form. As it was, she was still having trouble wrapping her mind around the idea the planetoid around which the Maverick had been orbiting the past few days was a life form planning to dine on their comrades.
Sorry.
Nathan apologized sheepishly, realizing there was no need to be quite so clinical.
Force of habit.
Go on.
Chris spoke up sternly over the sound of their conversation because he wanted to hear why Alex called this meeting. His concern for the safety of his people was such that he had no patience to tolerate the senior staff's usual banter.
Yes, sir.
Alex waited until she had their attention before speaking again.
While we may have established what we've seen before are illusions, there is no way an illusion could keep us from scanning it or finding our crewmates on its surface. By all rights, our sensors ought to pick up the away team with no trouble at all so we can get a transporter lock.
So why can't we?
Mary asked, intrigued by what Alex was implying.
Because we assume the creature is capable of exuding a powerful dampening field, when in actual fact, I don't think it's doing that at all. I don't think it's instrumentation or sensors. I think it's us.
Us?
Vin burst out.
How could it be us?
Telepathy?
Chris stated, guessing where Alex was going. In retrospect, it was the most logical explanation for what had happened since they arrived in this system. Chris had yet to encounter any dampening field so powerful it could resist all scanning forms. Throughout this entire situation, what Chris found so hard to believe was nothing they had on board the Maverick could penetrate the shell surrounding the planet. Besides, how else was a creature like that able to communicate with others of its species? A spaceborne organism as complex as the one they now faced would find telepathy the most expedient way to communicate with another of its kind. By the same token, it could also use that capability to affect other life forms.
"But we heard a distress signal,"
Vin protested, finding it highly distasteful to accept that something could have altered his view of things using mind control. It was not as if he did not have enough difficulties with his mental shields without having a strange alien creature probing his thoughts and shaping his perception.
"We were light years away when we detected that distress beacon. That couldn't have been an illusion."
"The signal is probably real,"
Alex explained, understanding all too well why Vin was so repulsed by the notion of the alien affecting his mind. Personally, she had not liked the idea any more than he did when Nathan first brought up the possibility.
"I don't doubt we heard the distress signal sent by the Lennon before it crashed. However, once we got close enough to the creature, it was able to affect us almost immediately, giving us the illusion of self it needed us to see."
"To get us on the planetoid," Chris concluded, not having to hear the rest of Alex's narrative because it was pretty apparent to everyone by now what the alien's hidden agenda had been. "No doubt it would have manufactured some way to get the rest of the crew down to the planet, and if that didn't work, throw some illusion at us to force the ship to land or worse."
"Exactly,"
Alex concluded.
"So now that we know why and how it does what it does, what can we do about it?"
Vin asked, looking at the two senior officers for a solution. Like everyone else in the room, Vin was more interested in helping their stranded crewmen rather than focusing on the fact that they had been duped from the very start.
"We're no good to Buck or anyone else down there if we are just as susceptible to whatever telepathy that thing is using on them."
"Well, I think I may have a solution to that,"
Nathan revealed now that the discussion had reached this point.
"Judging from the ECG readings and all the data Alex accumulated on the creature since we arrived, I believe there is a way for us to get around the illusionary effects of its telepathy."
"How?"
"Well, at the moment, our optic nerves and our neural pathways are being bombarded with signals that only allow us to see and hear what the creature wishes us to see. To counteract that effect, I can adjust the optic nerve to accept signals from only a visual source, like the light spectrum. It will be a little disorientating at first, but will provide enough visual acuity for a person to function and perceive the creature as it truly is."
"It will do."
Chris was unafraid of the risks when there did not seem to be any other alternative. Now he was aware of just what kind of danger Buck and the others faced. Chris was willing to gamble on any chance they had of retrieving the away team, even if it meant an adjustment, as Nathan put it.
"Go on."
"The serum's effects do not last for more than 2 hours, and I estimate a human body could handle 2 dosages, no more. I would not recommend it any more than that because the optic nerve and neural pathways are too sensitive for continued manipulation. However, the effect should last long enough for us to go to the surface and extract the away team."
"Is the serum ready for use?"
Chris sat up in his chair, poised to move at a moment's notice once he had the answer he needed.
"Yes, I prepared the hypos shortly before the briefing."
"All right, I want a minimum complement for our away team. Vin, you and I will take a shuttle down there."
Chris started to lift himself out of the chair when he noticed no one else was doing the same. A line of tension ran throughout the room, not to mention an atmosphere of awkwardness that put him on guard immediately. Although Vin wore his usual unflappable expression on his face, Nathan was more telling. The doctor was tense but was not quite ready to say what was on his mind. Alex remained impassive and was frowning because he had not singled her out to be on the rescue team, and Mary just looked plain uncomfortable.
"Okay."
He sat back down.
"What is it?"
Furious glances were exchanged back and forth across the room before Mary let out a deep breath as a hint of crimson stole into her cheeks.
"Captain,"
she said after a moment because as protocol officer, it was her duty to do so.
"It is inappropriate for you to leave the ship."
Chris looked at her blankly until he realized what she was trying to tell him sunk in.
"Oh no, you don't. You're not going to start quoting me regulations about the captain staying on the bridge."
"Then I will."
Alex rose to Mary's defense because Mary's feelings for Chris made it difficult for her to be blunt.
"It's tactically unwise for you to leave the ship. As your acting first officer, It is my duty to inform you with half the command staff on the planetoid unaccounted for. Your place is here on the bridge. I am the one who should be going. The Maverick should not be left without her captain if it falls under attack. We have no idea what this life form will do once it discovers we can see through its facade. It's been responsible for the death of billions of life forms on several different planets. It could not have done that without some form of mobility. If worst comes to worst, it may be capable of putting on a formidable defense as any hungry animal might do.
Chris swore under his breath and smoldered at her words, mostly because she was right. There were too many variables at work here for him to risk himself and his ship over his own desires. If the thing could move from planet to planet, there was nothing to prevent it from coming after the Maverick when it felt under threat. He had to be on the bridge for such a possibility. A good captain had to know when to stand down. This was one of those times.
Point taken, Commander. You and Vin will take a shuttle to the surface of the planetoid. I want you to find our people and get out. No deviations. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
She said kindly, aware of how hard this was for him. Alex had not wished to push the point, but there was no other choice with Buck and Ezra off the ship. She was expendable. Chris Larrabee was not. Buck felt his heart pounding in his chest as he ran across the barren landscape, widening the distance between himself and his party as he raced towards the rendezvous point where he left the rest of the away team. As he neared it, he heard the sounds of phaser fire and noises not too dissimilar from what he and JD discovered before finding Ensign Stark. When Aislinn apologized to him, he realized everyone at the rendezvous point was in grave danger. Buck barely noticed his enviro suit as he hurried forward, crossing the sandy dunes until he reached the top of a hill, allowing him to see the place where he left the away team. Buck stopped short as his eyes widened in horror at the broken bodies lying across the flat plain after the massacre. Some were still standing, but many of them were injured or dead.
Buck!
Ezra called out when he sighted the first officer gaping at the scene he and Julia had stumbled upon a short time ago. For a moment, Buck did not answer, and Ezra could only imagine what the man must be thinking, because Ezra had the exact same thought when he was faced with this carnage. Buck's gloved hands fisted up as the first officer drew closer to what was left of his away team. Julia was helping the other security officers tend to the dead and administer aid to those still alive.
Ezra!
Buck seemed to snap out of his dazed state at the call of his missing security officer.
Where the hell have you been? We've been looking everywhere for you. Trust me, Commander.
Ezra let out a heavy sigh as Buck reached him.
It was not by choice, we were led astray. Julia and I had made an interesting discovery. We went to investigate when we were beset by an alien entity who placed a rather large natural formation in our way.
Entity.
Buck looked at him and then remembered what Aislinn told him about a creature on this planet communicating with the crew of the Lannan.
Is that what did this?
He stared at the bodies around him and felt his stomach hollow in shock and anger. Suddenly Buck understood why Chris was the way he was about losing any crew. The presence of the dead around stabbed him with guilt. He was their commanding officer. He should have been able to stop this or at least seen it coming.
No, it was not some alien life form that perpetrated this atrocity.
The chief replied, feeling his jaw clench in anger just thinking about who attacked their fellow officers and crewmates.
It was the Lennon's crew. According to Lieutenant Katavit, they transformed into animals and wrought this massacre upon our unsuspecting away team.
Buck merely stared at him in disbelief, but his response was cut short by the arrival of JD and Aislinn. The boy froze in his tracks and stared at what lay before him. Even through the faceplate of his helmet, Buck could see the horror and disgust in his eyes as he viewed the dead and wounded, not to mention the blood. The damn blood that was splattered everywhere, staining the earth and draining JD's face of color.
JD.
Buck started walking towards the young man, seeing the panic strike him. Aislinn merely displayed sadness at what lay before her because she had seen it all 1,000 times before. Of course, if what Ezra suspected about that graveyard of ships was true, then it was no exaggeration. He followed Buck as the first officer hurried to JD. The young ensign, unaccustomed to such a grisly scene, reacted the way only a novice could. JD could not breathe. Nausea gripped his stomach at the sight of all those dead bodies, piercing right through the walls of his control until he could feel bile snaking up his throat. Fumbling for his helmet, he wrenched its fastenings free before hurling it aside. Without pause, he doubled over and wrenched the contents of his last meal into the sand, continuing to do so until all he could eject was the acid inside his stomach.
Oh my god, oh my god.
JD.
Buck came up to him and held his head down,
helping him through the moment. Humiliation overcame him just as quickly as nausea at the undignified display, but he could not help it. He knew those people stretched out on the dirt, their bodies ripped open, their blood pooling across the sand.
Just breathe easy.
Buck understood utterly what the youth was going through. No one could witness something like this for the first time and not be unaffected. If JD had reacted any other way, he would have been surprised. It took a few seconds for JD to compose himself. Throughout most of the episode, Buck remained at his side, gently offering the young ensign enough words to make him understand his reaction was natural and there was nothing to be ashamed about.
"I'm sorry, Buck,"
JD whispered, wiping his mouth once he was able to control himself. Despite Buck's understanding, JD felt terribly embarrassed by his display and wished he possessed more control when he saw those dead bodies.
"I've never seen anything like that before."
"It's okay, JD."
Buck patted him on the back, wanting to reassure him there was no shame in this.
"That's exactly why it happened. You'll see a lot of worse things in your time, and you'll handle it. I got every confidence in that. It's just going to take some time."
JD offered him a wan smile, and Buck had to admit that helping the kid out had centered his own anger somewhat and gave him focus. Once he was assured JD was all right, Buck strode back to Aislinn, gesturing at Ezra to join him. The security officer was providing some of the wounded with first aid but complied immediately when Buck waved him over.
"All right, Aislinn,"
Buck addressed the young girl, trying to keep the anger out of his voice because she looked so damned afraid. He reminded himself she was not responsible for the actions of her elders. After all, she had come to him and JD to warn them. Buck also had no doubt by allying herself with him and the rest of the Maverick, she had become subject to their fates if her former crewmates were to attack again.
"I need to know what this thing is."
Aislinn's eyes glittered with tears as she looked at Buck and Ezra, showing them this was not her intention. She was never given a choice in any of this.
"It's all around us."
"All around us? I don't understand. What do you mean by that?"
She paused, trying to choose the right words, and then decided that the best way to tell him was to just come out and say it.
"This place."
Her eyes moved around the landscape before returning to Buck's face once more.
"This place is the entity you are seeking."
"You mean this entire planetoid is a life form?"
Ezra stated, understanding flooding his mind with that one revelation.
"It actually makes sense. Julia and I had disappeared for all that time because we discovered a graveyard of ships, not simply one or two, but dozens. We only managed to see it because Julia acquired a case of flash blindness, and in the seconds it took for her vision to clear, the ships became visible."
"Okay, it's a life form, and it's lured us here."
Buck tried to wrap his mind around all this new data.
"What does it want from us?"
Aislinn gulped visibly before responding.
"It wants to feed. It needs life force, but it does not know how to kill to extract it. The body must die first before it can take the energy. It communicated with those of us who were left, after taking all the life from the Lennon, and offered us a chance to survive, if we would do the killing for it. We were trapped here. We could not leave, and we had no choice but to help it."
"No choice?"
Ezra snorted derisively, wondering how anyone could sell out others in such a devil's bargain.
"All you needed to do was to leave on your ship or tell the poor innocents you kept here, like flypaper, the truth, and they could have taken you."
"No, they couldn't."
Buck sighed, understanding at last, the heartache and the sacrifice Aislinn made when she agreed to help them.
"What do you mean?"
Ezra turned to Buck, who was staring at the young girl with just as much sorrow.
"They're not the crew of the Lennon, Ezra. They're the livestock."
Chapter 15. Aislinn.
"How is that possible?"
Ezra stared at Buck with astonishment following his revelation about the Lennon's crew. It took quite a bit to shake the calm and collected security chief, but his jaw dropped at Buck's statement. While he thought the people they had been interacting with these past few days were a little peculiar and their body language showed deception, nothing in his wildest imaginings would have led him to the conclusion Buck now presented.
"It let you see what you wanted to see,"
Aislinn whispered again. Unable to meet Buck's gaze now, he knew her secret. She never thought it was possible to feel so ashamed in her life, but she was. She cared for Buck profoundly and felt a kinship with these spacefaring people who lived their lives among the stars as she always dreamed of doing. Aislinn did not wish to hurt them, and she was sick of the killing.
"You wanted to see survivors, so you did."
Buck placed his hand on her cheek, refusing to see anything else but the young woman who risked everything to help them, not only her life but also her humanity.
"T- Tell us what happened, Aylin.
He urged gently, showing her he bore her no malice.
The real truth this time.
Aislinn nodded and began speaking softly.
I don't know what happened to make the ship land here. It did the same thing to the Lennon as it did to the other ships. We heard it talking to us inside our heads, and it said Captain Kellison did not want to stay here. A Betazoid on board could sense the planetoid was a living thing, making it impossible for it to trick the crew into killing each other like it did with all the other ships and the people on the planets. It told us, if we helped it, we could both survive. It helped us escape our cages, so the others could kill the crew, and it was able to feed.
Dear Lord?
Ezra never imagined the answers to his questions would take such a bizarre and gruesome turn. Now he understood why they had such difficulties conducting basic repairs or improving their living conditions on the ship and why they were so adamant about remaining behind. If they were to leave the planetoid and beam on board the Maverick, the creature's powers might diminish enough for their true selves to be seen.
Then it was Janice who killed Tony.
JD, who had been listening quietly, spoke up.
Tony?
Ezra gave Buck a sharp glance.
Ensign Stark?
Yeah. Buck nodded somberly while JD's gaze dropped to his feet.
Yeah, she went missing right after the captain gave us the order to evacuate. We found what was left of her in the engineering deck.
Ezra said nothing for a moment, reacting to the young woman's death with a slow blink of his eyes and a loud exhale before his gambler's facade fell into place once again. Like Buck, Ezra considered the crew of the Maverick his responsibility, and losing anyone made him feel as if he had been deficient in his duty to protect them.
So this thing has been using all of you to attract other people to the surface?
Buck asked, getting back to the subject at hand.
Yes.
Aislinn nodded, wishing they would ask her no more questions because she felt guilty enough about all those who died.
Most of the time, the ships land, and the others were able to make the kill, but yours was different. It was not like the smaller ships that happened this way.
Galaxy-class ships aren't made for landing,
JD explained.
They can't enter the atmosphere.
It could sense all the people on board, and hoped it might trap enough of you down here, so we could feed. It had to be careful though, because it knew you could hurt it.
Your phaser,
Buck replied, glancing at Ezra, reminding the security chief of the experimental shot he had taken at the surface when they first arrived. By testing his phaser to see if it would work, Ezra had caused the planetoid to rock violently, leading them to the conclusion the spatial body had been unstable. Now the answer appeared far simpler.
That was a reaction to pain, not an unstable planetoid. So it kept delaying our departure while it came up with a new plan. Then Ezra and Julia stumbled on the ships that came here previously, and things started to unravel even further when the captain decided we were to abandon the Lennon here and return to the ship.
So, is everything here an illusion?
JD asked Aislinn, trying to wrap his mind around what they had learned.
Everything except the air, it makes that on its own.
Commander.
Julia Pemberton announced herself as she approached them. The chief engineer wore a worried expression on her face as she wiped the sweat from her brow and tried not to notice her Starfleet singlet was stained with the blood of injured officers.
We got a lot of wounded people here. We need to get them to the ship. Some of them are bleeding badly, and if we don't get them to sick bay, they're going to die.
Buck only needed to look over her shoulder to know it was not an exaggeration. He took a deep breath and considered what they would do next, aware all eyes were cast in his direction, awaiting orders.
Aylin, do you think you can help us get to our ships?
I can sort of track it. I have a strong sense of smell that can give me an idea if we are going in the right direction, but it won't help because you won't be able to see it.
That doesn't matter,
Buck replied quickly.
Julia, Ezra said flash blindness caused you to see those ships the first time. Is that true?
Yes.
She nodded, seeing what he was getting at.
But it wouldn't appear long enough for us to fly both runabouts out of here.
We can work our way around that. We'll do it one person at a time. Aylin will lead us to where the runabouts are. We'll get on and keep repeating it for as long as it lasts until we can take off.
This is going to require a great deal of coordination. Many of our injured are in no condition to make the attempt.
I agree. However, we only need one runabout to get to the Maverick. Once we tell the captain what's going on down here, they may know of a way to get us out of here, using the same method.
It's a plan.
Julia agreed because the alternative was to sit here and wait while they were all hunted down and killed one by one.
All right.
Buck spoke up loudly, not just to those in his immediate vicinity but to the rest of the Maverick's away team.
We're moving out.
Buck.
Aislinn gasped out loud and captured everyone's undivided attention as her eyes widened in fear.
We have to go now. They're coming.
Vin Tanner blinked. Even though he could see clearly enough, it felt as if he had been staring at the sun for too long. Everything before him was reflecting light to some degree, and he had to concentrate for a moment to regain his equilibrium. Even though it was impossible for him to feel the serum enter his veins through a hypospray, the adjustment to his vision made it clear exactly when Nathan's concoction had started to work. Alex was looking over the phaser rifles they brought with them. Vin wondered if she had similar difficulties with her sight as he piloted the shuttle worthy out of the Maverick's shuttle bay. Alex's hands moved deftly over the metal, indicating if she had the same disorientation he was experiencing at the moment. She certainly was not showing it. Her eyes studied the weapons carefully, ensuring they were in perfect working order if required during their rescue expedition. The worthy sailed out of the shuttle bay, and Vin immediately keyed in the coordinates for the landing zone where the runabouts Midkiff and Perlman had put down. Among the inventory for their rescue mission was an ample supply of serum for the away team. Although not as versatile as the runabouts since it was designed as a short-range vessel, the shuttle handled well once they left the bay and made a neat arc in space towards the alien creature.
Oh hell!
He found himself exclaiming as he peered out of the cockpit window once the planetoid came into view. For a few seconds, he could only stare at the life form beyond the hull of the shuttle in astonishment. What he was staring at looked nothing like the planetoid it had claimed to be, far from it, in fact. There was no adequate way Vin could describe it since there had never been a creature resembling it. All he could see was pulsing pink and lavender-colored flesh, gigantic veins running up and down the length of its body, with no eyes to speak of and the ripple against its skin whenever it breathed.
What?
Alex looked up when he made his exclamation and shared the same reaction to her first sight of the creature.
Oh my god.
She whispered in similar awe, the scientist in her immediately reacting to the situation.
Computer, begin scanning the life form.
Unable to comply.
The computer's dulcet voice returned.
Continue to scan anyway.
What are you doing?
Vin asked as he set the course towards the creature.
We've never seen anything like this thing before.
Alex explained, her eyes still fixed on it. Were there any other creatures like this in existence? Was it part of a species, or was it a fluke of nature?
Federation xenobiologists will have a field day with the data we'll accumulate.
Makes sense.
Vin agreed, remembering once they were far enough away from here, the creature's influence over their perceptions would be broken. He would not be surprised if all their scans revealed a wealth of information about the life form previously obscured by its illusionary capabilities.
It's a shame we can't find some other way for it to feed. It's not killing because it's evil. It's just trying to survive.
I know.
Alex sighed, feeling the same way. She was impressed by this remarkable creature, not only by its ability to mask itself, but genuinely space-dwelling life forms were rare.
Maybe those xenobiologists at Starfleet can learn enough about it to substitute its food source. The best thing we can do right now is to get our people off and put some distance between us and it, without provoking it into attacking. I'd hate to fire on it unless we really have to.
No kidding.
Vin agreed, his eyes still fixed on the creature's form as it loomed closer in the cockpit window. As they approached it, they could see the grooves of its skin, the veins that pulsed with life, resembling rivers as they snaked across the alien's length.
How are you doing?
Alex asked, now that they had a moment alone. Vin looked up long enough to realize she was not talking about the optical adjustment but rather a more personal matter.
I'm better. Mary's been showing me a couple of mental exercises, and I've been managing to get this thing under control.
Well, think of it this way, you could be a Betazoid.
Christ.
He winced at the thought.
Don't even joke about something like that.
Hey Vin.
Alex said after a pause, deciding this was a good time as anything to bring up something that was preying on her mind since the incident between them.
You know you can talk to me about these things.
Vin faced front and replied just as quietly.
I didn't want to bother you with what's going on in my head. I get the impression that you got troubles of your own.
Alex could not argue with him there. What he probably saw inside her mind during their meld gave him good reason to believe it.
I do, but it helps me if I can help you.
Vin looked at her. And unspoken things passed between them, needing no words to convey.
You know something? You're my best friend on this ship, and I want to help you if I can. I know I'm not the easiest person to talk to sometimes, but I'll always be there for you. You can count on me.
Friends, huh?
and while her words warmed him, there was something about her definition of their relationship that bothered him. She was more than just a friend to him. Vin did not understand what he felt for Alex, knowing only when he was with her. It didn't matter if he was different or not quite Vulcan. She made him feel good about himself in a way no one had done since his foster parents.
Yeah.
She flashed him the special smile reserved only for him.
Friends.
Once again, he was filled with passionate emotions he struggled to understand, except for one thing. Whatever they were to each other, they were definitely not friends. The Maverick's crew hurried away from the rendezvous point, sure the scent of blood from the wounded would do nothing to hide their escape from the apex predators hunting them. Despite being armed with phasers, too few of them were able-bodied enough to repel the animals stalking them without endangering the wounded they were attempting to move to safety. With Aislinn guiding them to the approximate position of the roundabouts, Buck and Ezra took up the rear, keeping a close eye on the terrain for the inevitable ambush.
You realize, of course,
Ezra said as his eyes surveyed the barren landscape before them and saw nothing stirring in the dunes.
If this creature is so adept at tricking us into believing animals bound for Elysian Zoo were actually the crew of the Lennon, it is all possible it could do the same and allow them to sneak up on us before we were even aware of it.
Buck's eyes remained on the terrain, but he did stiffen enough to respond in a slow drawl.
Are you trying to be pessimistic, or does it come naturally?
Why naturally, of course, Commander.
You were right, Ezra.
About what?
Ezra looked at him mystified.
About coming here in the first place. We didn't know enough about the planetoid to make a landing. We should have been more thorough with our investigation.
Buck,
he said in a voice devoid of its usual smugness.
You were no more wrong than I. We all thought there were survivors here and your desire to help them was not misguided. As Starfleet officers, we must render aid, no matter the risk, to ourselves personally. No one could have suspected the truth behind this place. I knew something was wrong, but while I always believed the Lennon's crew had something to hide, not for one moment did I suspect they were any more than who they claimed to be.
Thanks.
Buck was touched by the security officer's attempt to assuage his guilt, and if it were not for the number of dead, Buck might have allowed himself to be consoled.
But I don't think that's going to be much comfort to Ensign Stark when it's all said and done.
Buck, watch out!
Ezra shouted and shoved Buck out of the way when a tiger materialized out of thin air and lunged at the first officer. Buck tumbled to the ground as the creature landed right in the place where he had been standing. It roared loudly, baring its teeth as it prepared to lunge again. This time, the security officer was better prepared, and he raised his arm to fire his phaser when another feral animal sprung out of nowhere, knocking him off his feet. Buck scrambled to his feet and saw both animals preparing to converge upon Ezra as the man struggled to find the phaser knocked out of his hand with the appearance of the second animal. Powerful jaws widened, preparing to snap shut around Ezra's arm when Buck fired at the nearest animal even though he could hear the low growl of a third. The phaser was set to kill, and the beam struck its target, disintegrating the animal before it had a chance to bite down on Ezra. However, the security officer was nowhere out of trouble since he had another big cat to deal with. Buck swung around and fired at what appeared to be a Klingon mountain cat, all tusk and teeth, not unlike a saber-toothed tiger of Earth's ancient past, sprinting towards him. He fired only once, halting the animal just before it pounced, not waiting around to see it die. Instead, he turned back to see Ezra fighting for dear life with what looked like a timber wolf as he held the animal back by the throat, trying to keep its massive jaws from his neck. Using all the strength he could muster, Ezra flipped the creature over his shoulder, feeling warm blood on his body and legs from where the wolf's sharp claws had dug into him while they wrestled. It landed on its back and roared in outrage as Ezra searched frantically for his phaser when suddenly he saw the creature struck with a beam of energy. It let out a howl of fury as it glowed momentarily and then disappeared altogether.
Ezra!
Buck hurried to him and helped the panting security officer to his feet. Ezra was covered in dirt and blood, with deep lacerations in his skin.
I could have done without that,
Ezra remarked, retrieving his phaser, still a little shaken.
Thank you for your timely intervention, Commander.
My pleasure.
Buck answered before a troubled expression fell over his face.
Is it me, or should there have been more of those things?
Now that you mention it,
Ezra agreed, suspicion immediately making him forget the pain caused by the rips in his skin. The realization dawned upon both of them at the same time.
Oh shit.
Buck broke away from the security officer as he ran after the rest of the away team at top speed. Ezra remained behind,
keeping up the best he could even though he was bleeding in several places and the pain was affecting him more than he would like to admit. He saw Buck disappear over the crest of a dune when suddenly he heard the sound of phaser fire and voices shouting in alarm. Hobbling in pain and leaving traces of blood as he struggled to keep up, Ezra's heart pounded in his chest at the thought of harm befalling Julia. The creatures have cleverly distracted them with three of their number while the main group converged upon the rest of the away team. Their prey easy to find thanks to the scent of blood. Ezra crested the hill and saw Julia helping an engineering team member with severe leg injuries out of the kill zone while JD provided as much fire as he was capable. Having learned their lesson the first time around, the creatures were not engaging the armed Starfleet officers, concentrating their attention instead on the weaker members of the group. Ezra supposed they were following the typical hunting behavior of large predators in the wild. Those armed were well protected, but their number was too few, and Ezra noticed in some instances their attackers seemed to disappear and reappear, no doubt being given assistance by the alien life form upon which they were all trapped. Large, jungle predators appeared out of nowhere, and Ezra was hardly surprised none of the herbivore exports to the Lysian Zoo had survived. Buck saw JD fending off a large bear-like animal bounding towards him with surprising speed. Having recognized the beams of phaser energy as something it should avoid, it barreled towards JD, who was trying to keep the behemoth away from Julia and an injured officer. The distance between them narrowed much too rapidly for JD to afford a mistake. As much confidence as Buck had in JD, he knew the youth was too green to have that much pressure forced upon him at the spur of the moment. He should not have to die for his inexperience. Aiming carefully, he tried to fire and then heard a loud, mighty roar behind him. Spinning around as fast as he could, he barely had time to register from which direction the attack was coming before a great weight lunged at him, and he was tumbling down the slight slope, with no idea where his phaser went in the downward descent. He could feel the hot and fetid breath of something savage and aggressive scratching away at him with its powerful hind legs. Buck let out a cry of pain as he felt what he was sure were claws tearing at his flesh. Both he and the creature came to a stop at the bottom of the hill. Buck saw a set of widening jaws preparing to take a healthy bite out of his neck before he raised his arms in a defensive posture, allowing those inch-long teeth to sink into his forearm instead. As the mandibles closed with swift efficiency, a scream escaped him before he even had a chance to acquaint himself with the pain that came with the bite.
Buck!
He heard JD shout and saw the boy's concentration waver long enough to let the bear creature narrow the gap between itself and JD. Buck's attention was snapped back to his current predicament when the animal tearing at his arm began to tighten its grip, digging teeth deeper into his flesh. Buck fought to dislodge it, but the animal was a mass of fur, frenzied and feral as it fought to stay where it was. He had to get to JD before that monster ripped him to pieces, Buck thought desperately, when suddenly a blast from what was definitely not a hand phaser cut through the frantic sounds already charging the air. The creature on top of him disappeared before his eyes as another blast was heard. Buck rolled onto his stomach, his arm oozing blood from torn flesh as his eyes searched for the source of this rescue. Standing not too far from the scene of the battle were Alexandra Stiles and Vin Tanner. The officer of the Khan was responsible for saving Buck's life but had little time to rest on his laurels. Vin immediately turned his attention to the creature closing in on JD and took careful aim. Buck held his breath a moment because the shot would have to be extremely precise since the beast was no more than inches away from JD and the distance between shooter and target was considerable. However, as unsure as Vin might be about himself at times, there was no such hesitation when he pulled the trigger on the phaser rifle. The shot was neat and right on target, killing the creature in mid-step before it had a chance to advance any further. Alex was also causing similar devastation with her rifle, shooting all the attacking creatures, even those they could not see. For a moment, Buck thought she might have been firing at nothing, but in depth, he saw tendrils of smoke emerge out of nowhere, which did not have its origins from her rifle. As Buck understood it, the alien drew the life force from the creature's diet, feeding on the servants that provided it with sustenance for so long. He had no idea how Alex and Vin were managing to see, but he was not about to argue with the results. Buck did not know how long it took before enough of the creatures were shot for the others to decide the odds were more than they were willing to risk. Almost as suddenly as the carnage had begun, it ended abruptly with the remaining animals withdrawing. While the away team made a valiant effort to fight off the threat and defend its wounded, there was no victory with the casualties that lay dead in the sand. Buck clutched his bleeding arm and struggled to get up when Vin extended a hand towards him.
"You look like you could use a little help there, Commander.
Vin said with one of those little smiles of his, which usually meant he was pleased as hell but too damn stoic to show it.
Oh, just a little.
Buck grinned, never thinking he could be so happy to see anyone as Vin pulled him up quickly with his Vulcan strength.
Damn, I didn't know you were such a fine shot, Elf.
Vin gave him a look and knew if it had been anyone else, he might have had cause to be offended, but Buck would never intentionally insult him. Besides, he liked the first officer enough to allow Buck to use that nickname.
Well, some people do better with a phaser rifle than their mouth.
You're spending way too much time with Alex.
Buck chuckled as they walked over to join the others. Thanks to Alex and Vin's timely arrival, the away team was soon led to the runabouts, which were only a few short meters away from where the creatures chose to launch their final attack. The worthy had put down next to the runabouts after the duo spotted the crafts from the air. It was not hard to find the away team once they had landed, since the sounds of roars, screams, and phaser blasts were more efficient in attracting their attention than the brightest flare. Almost all of the away team needed immediate medical attention, and Buck wanted to get back to the Maverick as soon as possible. It was strange to be told they had boarded the runabouts when they could only see the open landscape. JD had agreed to pilot the Midgif while Buck was doing the honors on the Pearlman. Of course, before they could make any move to return to the Maverick, Alex made sure everyone was inoculated with the serum Nathan created to adjust their optical nerve to see past the illusion the alien had created for them. Alex was about to press the hypospray to his arm when suddenly Aislinn came to him. Alex stared at the young woman with something akin to shock. Those who were inoculated had the same reaction to her. He wondered what it was they saw.
Do you promise to take me with you?
She looked at him with those soulful eyes, and he wondered what kind of creature she had been in that other life before the Lannan. The one she would soon be returning to.
Of course, I'm going to take you with us, honey.
He placed his hand on her cheek again, wanting to assure her he would not abandon her, not after what she had given up to help him and the crew of the Maverick. She was just a child, no matter what species she was born. He believed her when she said she had no choice.
I know what you did for us, Aislinn. I won't ever forget that.
Thank you, Buck.
She answered with tears in her eyes. Sorrow he would never understand, filled her. After this day, she would never be able to tell him because she would no longer have a voice. The days of humanity were behind her now, and she was ready to accept it. Perhaps she had been from the first moment he had looked at her.
I want to see the stars. I want to see the stars just once.
I'll see to it.
Emotion filled his heart for this young girl who wanted so much and was doomed to be denied forever.
I promise you.
That was enough. Aislinn believed him because he was Commander Buck Wilmington, a man of honor who would never consciously hurt a lady, even one like her. She stepped away and nodded to Alex as if she was ready now for him to see her. Alex gave Aislinn a long look before turning to Buck and pressing the hypospray against his arm. A loud hiss followed, and Buck waited for the serum to take full effect. According to Alex, it would take no more than a few seconds. His eyes scanned the barren landscape of the planetoid that was a grave to so many ships before the Maverick's arrival. He watched as the sandy dunes disappeared, watched with shock and mild horror when the craggy terrain drained into a living, breathing creature capable of producing the most remarkable feat of deception Buck had ever known. He saw the dark sky against the alien's form and then looked forward. At Aislinn. She was at his feet. A small bundle of fur, not at all threatening and dangerous as her fellow crewmates had been. She had not lied when she confessed to being the smallest. She was little more than a kitten and still stunningly beautiful. Golden in color, her pelt gleamed under the light of the stars. She looked at him with feline eyes, and when she opened her mouth, a soft kittenish purr spoke to him in words he could no longer understand. The language of a Silurian minx cat. Buck leaned over and picked up the tiny creature into his arms and offered her a smile because no matter what she was, he made her a promise. JD, Ezra, and Julia wore the same stricken expression, sadness for the creature who made a most charming young girl and proved far more efficiently than anyone could have imagined what it was to be human. Epilogue. Sweet Revenge. Captain's Log, Stardate 23.25.01. Following the rescue of the away team from the clutches of the space alien impersonating a planetoid, I ordered the permanent establishment of a warning beacon in the system known as J-12. The beacon will transmit an automated signal to any passing ships, warning them of the alien and its powers of illusion.
At the behest of Commander Stiles, we have also sent all records regarding the alien to Starfleet Command in the hopes that the Xenobiology Department may find some way to supplement its food source with a substitute. We hope this would prevent it from preying on life forms crossing its path. As the commander informs me, the species can hardly be faulted for its actions, and it is an opinion I agree with. Like any living thing, its need to feed is a natural survival function and should no more be held accountable than a whale for the plankton it eats. I suppose it's really a matter of perception. Since I have been rather accommodating with requests today, I have also granted Commander Wilmington permission to send down a supply of food for the life form still living in symbiosis with the creature. While we cannot help the alien itself, we can provide sustenance for the animals left behind in the wake of the Lennon's destruction. Food drops will be made periodically for as long as the life forms exist. Like the alien, they cannot be held accountable for their actions when their motivation is to feed. Starfleet Command may question my leniency on this matter, but there is nothing served by destroying either the alien or the predators that exist upon it. I hope that someday we may understand one to help both. Under recommendations from Commander Wilmington, I have put in official commendations for Lieutenant Commander Standish and Lieutenant Commander Stiles. If not for the foresight of both, we may have lost more crew than we had. I will also be writing letters to the families of the crewmen we lost, including Ensign Stark.
Chris ended his log entry and took a deep breath, easing back into his chair after the rather lengthy report. He stared out the window of his ready room and saw the stars blurring past them at high warp. He could not say he was not glad for the quiet after the last few days. Following their return to the ship, most of the away team spent a great deal of time under the ministrations of the chief medical officer being treated for several injuries. Most of these were the severe trauma caused by Lennon's crew, but the return to the Maverick saved their lives. Josiah had called earlier this morning to inform Chris the Maverick's crew count had risen by one. It seemed for the first time in his life, Buck Wilmington actually had a young lady to stay permanently in his quarters. Even if the young lady was actually a Silurian minx cat, this was a significant improvement for a man who got nervous if he had to buy more than one matching dinner plate because it felt just too much like commitment. Still, after reading Buck's report, Chris understood his old friend's reasoning for taking responsibility for the animal and supposed it was just like Buck to do something like that. Chris was snapped out of his thoughts when he heard the familiar melodic chirping of someone at his door.
Come in.
The door slid open, and Casey stepped into his inner sanctum.
Captain, you wanted me to remind you you had an appointment with Lieutenant Tanner on the holodeck?
Chris glanced at the chronometer on the wall and swore when he realized the time. He and Vin were going to try climbing the Meshapia chair as they had intended 2 days ago before this had all begun. As it was, he was due to meet Vin at the holodeck in 10 minutes and was glad Casey dropped in to remind him, or else he would have forgotten completely. Finishing his log entry, Chris put down his data pad to get moving. Perhaps they ought to invite Ezra, Chris thought with a sly smile. After all, the security officer was quite the expert at mountain climbing after his adventures on the planetoid.
Thanks, Casey.
He offered the girl a grateful smile for the reminder as she advanced deeper into the office and took note of the data pad on his desk.
Your log entry, sir.
She asked politely since one of her tasks as his yeoman was to ensure that such documentation was stored away and copies made for transmission to Starfleet Command.
Yeah.
He nodded as he stood up from behind his desk.
You can file it away tomorrow if you like. I know you and JD had plans for the evening.
He recalled hearing the youth discussing it on the bridge earlier and did not want to stand in the way of their plans with something that could wait until tomorrow. It would not make any difference if Starfleet Command received his report now or a day later, the outcome would remain unchanged.
Thank you, Captain.
She brightened up immediately and brought an involuntary smile to Chris's jaded features. Despite himself, Chris felt rather protective of the girl who seemed far too young for life out in space on her own.
Just beware of young ensigns with tall tales and mood lighting.
He warned as he started across the carpeted floor toward the door, not entirely joking with her.
Oh, Captain.
Casey giggled and blushed at the same time.
JD's not like that.
I was an ensign once, Casey, and I can tell you, they're all like that.
May I join you?
Josiah Sanchez asked Mary Travis, who was finishing her cup of hot Vulcan tea while taking advantage of the panoramic view offered by Four Corners.
Certainly.
The protocol officer brightened at his presence, and Josiah could tell by the glow on her face she was in high spirits today. Mary had good reason to be proud of her efforts and was justified in her good mood. Following his conversation with Vin Tanner this morning, Josiah guessed much of Mary's elevated spirits had to do with the young Vulcan. Vin appeared a great deal happier than he had been when Josiah last saw him, and this was due to his lessons with Mary. Mary's new approach to teaching him the disciplines he had so much trouble mastering was proving to be a rousing success. It would not be long before Vin could exert control over his telepathic abilities like other Vulcans, which gave the young man great peace of mind.
"Unfortunately, I can't stay long,"
Mary confessed despite allowing him to join her.
"I've got to meet Julia at Holodeck 3 in about 10 minutes. I am required to provide assistance in the name of sisterhood."
"I won't ask,"
Josiah laughed as he nestled himself across the table with a cup of steaming coffee in his hand.
"I wanted to let you know I just saw Vin for his scheduled appointment, and without going into detail, I can safely say your lessons have had a marked improvement on his self-esteem."
Mary beamed, feeling singularly proud she was able to help him. She took a sip of her tea before she spoke again.
"I'm glad he's doing so well. Now I know how to teach him properly. In a couple of weeks, blocking other people's thoughts will be a reflex. He's actually a quick learner."
"Well, he has a good teacher,"
the counselor offered her a warm smile.
"You have done wonders for his spirits in that regard. You've made him understand that he is out of touch about what a proper Vulcan is supposed to be, only by choice, not by ability. That makes a big difference."
"He has you to thank as much as me, Josiah. If you hadn't set me straight, it would never have occurred to me to take that approach. In fact,"
she stared at him with narrowed eyes holding a hint of accusation,
"I think you are very Machiavellian. You sneak around our backs and give us this, oh so gentle nudge in the right direction. I had no idea that you could be so sneaky."
"Sneaky, I?"
Josiah looked back at her with complete innocence.
"I have no idea what you mean, Lieutenant Travis."
"I'll bet you don't."
Mary rolled her eyes skeptically and leaned closer to him.
"Come on, what's your secret?"
"Being married to a Betazoid. Either you learn to do things under the table, or you get used to being in trouble. A lot."
"And I thought being married to a Vulcan was hard. I'll never complain again."
After a moment, she sobered up a little, remembering the point of this exercise in the first place. Mary had not forgotten why Josiah wanted Vin to trust her, to bring her the questions about his Vulcan heritage he could not ask anyone else.
"I'll be there for him, Josiah,"
Mary promised, because she wanted to be there for Vin as someone had once been there for her when she arrived on Vulcan knowing nothing. No matter what the future entailed. Alexandra Stiles wondered why she was doing this. She would rather be in her quarters at this time of day, listening to Puccini or Deborah Harry, whichever came first, soaking in a luxuriously hot bubble bath. She could just imagine the soft scent of lavender in her nostrils and the delightful heat against her skin. Why on earth had she let Julia talk her into going to the holodeck to partake in the revenge she planned for their security chief? Then Alex recalled Julia had appealed to the worst common denominator, using words like sisterhood, empowerment, and all those feminist buzzwords immortalized in the centuries before them. "Oh, stop complaining," Alex chided herself as she stepped out of the turbo lift into the corridor leading to the holodeck. If Mary could take the time to support Julia's plans this evening, Alex supposed it would not be too much of an annoyance if she contributed an hour of her life to this enterprise. After all, it was not like Alex had any plans this evening. Not that Alex was upset she was free. She was perfectly aware that if she wanted suitors, Buck Wilmington would be on her doorstep so fast she would not know what hit her until breakfast. However, Alex was not ready for dating yet, and she doubted she ever would be. Of course, she was a grown woman, and like any other, she had all the baggage that went with being her age without a significant other in her life. Which made her question why Julia was so intent on torturing Ezra when it was apparent to everyone the chief engineer was crazy about the man.
"Ah, well, to each her own."
She turned the corner and saw Mary ahead of her. Alex hastened her pace to catch up with the protocol officer since they headed in the same direction.
"Hello, Mary.
Right on time for our joint flaming of Commander Standish?
The things we do in the name of sisterhood.
By the way, I didn't want to ask her this, but perhaps you can tell me what exactly did Ezra do to warrant this torture?"
"Oh, you haven't heard?"
Remembering the story Buck told her and the rest of the bridge about the disastrous first date between Julia and Ezra. The story had Mary in stitches by the time Alex was done telling it, and the blonde woman held her hand over her mouth as she laughed.
Oh my, that poor man. I don't envy him.
Neither do I, although I can't imagine what women of the 20th century found so titillating about watching half-naked men with oiled skin and tight-fitting shorts dancing to bad music.
As they said that, both women stopped short at the sight of Chris Larrabee and Vin Tanner wearing form-fitting mountain-climbing clothes that left nothing to the imagination in front of the holodeck doors, preparing for their mountain-climbing adventure. Alex and Mary went very silent as the two men stepped through the doors, oblivious that they were being observed. In a second, they were gone, leaving Mary and Alex to continue staring.
What time did Julia say we had to be there?
Oh, about now.
Mary mused, still staring at the closed door even though Chris and Vin had long gone.
Let's hurry.
Ezra Standish had a bad feeling about this. The restaurant in which he and Julia Pemberton were dining was very tasteful, but there was something about the volume of women in the place that concerned the chief of security. The setting was 20th century Earth. Although they were technically alone since the women in the restaurant were all holodeck creations, Ezra was gripped with ominous foreboding even though Julia had been nothing but pleasant throughout the evening. Perhaps it was because he was naturally suspicious, but something about the place, particularly the stage in the center of the room, made Ezra nervous. The restaurant itself bore a most curious name, Le Bear's. It also seemed to be a popular night spot for women, as he appeared to be the only man present. The floor show had yet to begin, and as Ezra dined on the beautiful meal of duck l'orange with a charming Bordeaux to accompany it, he tried not to let his suspicious nature ruin a pleasant evening. After all, they had been through quite a bit during their last away mission, and it would not be unreasonable to think Julia had forgiven him for their disastrous first date. Deciding he ought to just relax and enjoy the evening, Ezra eased back into his chair and regarded Julia. She looked stunning in the sleeveless emerald-colored dress that matched her eyes perfectly.
I am surprised,
he confessed, taking a sip of the Bordeaux from his glass.
I envisioned some terrible revenge after what I forced you to endure on our first evening together.
Whoa.
She met his gaze with a bit of a smile.
I knew it was not your intention to make me put my head inside the mouth of an enormous jungle cat. After the week we've had, it just seemed like a dress rehearsal for the main event.
Yes.
Ezra frowned, having thought the same thing after it was all said and done.
It was rather coincidental, wasn't it? I do apologize. I had no idea that Caesar's Palace would be so
tacky.
Believe it or not, I was aiming for opulent.
He gave her a look that reminded her of a little boy asking forgiveness.
Well, it was a good, if somewhat misguided, effort.
Suddenly the holodeck doors activated and slid open. The doors materialized out of thin air, although none of the other holodeck-inspired patrons seemed to notice its presence. To Ezra's surprise, Alex and Mary stepped inside from the outside corridor.
Are we late?
Mary asked as they approached the duo's table.
No, you're right, on time.
What is going on?
Ezra asked, revisited by those ominous feelings again as both Mary and Alex pulled up chairs at their table and sat down, trying to hide the smirks threatening to give the game away.
Computer, secure all exits and encrypt activation mechanisms with my authorization code, Pemberton 225471, and run upgraded program Pemberton 4 with voice command only from me.
With that, she winked at him before easing back into her chair to enjoy the fun that would soon begin.
Program initiate.
What do you intend on putting me through?
He questioned, assuming this was the revenge she had promised him, as he saw the master of ceremonies appear on the stage floor.
Oh, nothing that will hurt as much as sticking one's head in the open jaws of a tiger.
And pray to tell, what are you ladies here for?
He turned to Alex and Mary.
Sisterhood.
Mary said without hesitation.
Ladies, welcome to Le Bear's.
The MC captured all their attention when his loud voice boomed across the room. Upon his greeting, all the women but Julia, Mary, and Alex broke out into riotous cheering that made Ezra very worried.
Tonight, we have something extraordinary for all you lovely guests, who have come to see the beautiful young men of Le Bear's, all ready to perform for you.
Beautiful young men?
Ezra exclaimed and then suddenly realized with a splash of cold water what Le Bear's actually was. His realization made him stand up abruptly, but Julia stopped him before he could flee.
Hold it right there, partner. You ain't going to nowhere.
Julia, let us discuss this like rational human beings.
He stuttered, having some idea of the horror in store for him now, and knew he had a damn good reason to be very afraid.
Rational hell, we want to see some skin, yes?
Mary added her voice to that request, remembering what it was that was so fun about serving with humans again. Vulcans just did not have any appreciation regarding the delicacy of strip clubs.
To be specific, yours.
Mine?
Didn't I tell you?
Julia looked at him innocently.
Lobert's special performance tonight involves audience participation, and wouldn't you know it, I programmed this entire place with only one male in the audience.
Ezra groaned and then grabbed the bottle of Bordeaux to pour himself a full glass, telling himself there was only one way he was going out there, blind stinking drunk. He just hoped no one had a hollow camera. As he drained the glass, Ezra could only think one thing. The things a man did for love. Whenever Buck Wilmington wanted to see stars, he usually went to Four Corners or the Bridge. However, on this occasion, he decided he would forego the lively atmosphere of both locations and opted instead to visit the seldom-used observation deck. He knew Alex and Vin liked to come here because they preferred to enjoy the spectacular vista of stars when the Maverick was in high warp, in solitude. Unaware he sat at the place usually occupied by Vin, Buck stared out the glass while gently running his palm across the fur of the creature curled up most contently in his lap. The kitten purred as her wide eyes watched the stars beyond with fascination. A Silurian minx cat was hardly the most conventional of choices for a first-time pet, but then Buck knew he would never be able to see her as such. A part of him would never be able to regard this magnificent animal without remembering the sweet young girl she had been in another life. Buck made that girl a promise, and it was one he intended to keep because of what she gave up for him. She, who was once a young lady called Aislinn. Aislinn, in her true guise, aware of his mutual affection, raised her small head to let out a purr of contentment while her glowing eyes sparkled with the starlight rushing past them both. Buck made a mental note to make these sojourns a permanent thing. He promised Aislinn he would never abandon her, and it was an oath he intended to keep. The memory of that young girl would remain with him as long as he kept this exquisite creature in his life. So they could both see the stars.
The end. Thank you for listening to Star Trek Maverick, The Illusion of Self by The Scribe. As always, thank you to Nancy for allowing me to create castles on your wonderful playground.